Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
First part of the Lockdown Podcast Network. I am your host for today in this revolving chair of host duties. My name is Ryan McCallum. I'm here with Jose Grijalva, who is the co-host with the most, to be cliche and very silly. Jose, say hello to all your fans.
Hi, everybody. I'm the only one that doesn't move, right? It's like all you guys revolve around me. I'm like the sun, and I get a different planetary host every week.
You are the Axis Mundi, right? You learned that in class.
Earth is flat. Remember that.
That's right. Well, of course, we're talking Spurs today. There's just a little bit of news. It's early in the season, three games in. Spurs are 3-0. Of course, they'll be undefeated at the end of the year. So there's not going to be a ton to talk about in terms of wins and losses. But while we're on a winning streak, we should call out a couple of great stats. We'll do that. We'll talk Tony Parker. What else we got? We got a Miami Heat game tonight. We're recording this on Wednesday. So Spurs out there in Miami, different look. Miami team, certainly different look. Spurs team, the way that they're playing without Kawhi and without Tony Parker. What else do you want to get to, Jose? Or is that just enough?
Oh, to everybody giving DeJounte Murray love, thank you for catching up to me. I've been on the DeJounte Murray train for a year now. It's been a great ride, and it's getting better every day. Three games into it. Most improved player. Three games into... You know what? I'll just say this because I know I've been getting crap about it online. But, you know, we've been talking about early MVPs like Giannis and LeBron maybe.
Oh, my God.
How about LaMarcus Aldridge? Put his name in the MVP discussion.
Okay, I thought you were going to go DeJounte Murray on that. Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge has a... You know, I'll go through a couple of stats. And he's been an impressive scorer for so far this year. He's taken a lot of shots. That'll change, presumably. Or they just ride the LaMarcus Aldridge train. All the way to another championship. So in their race for Sace, as it were. But let's talk about the Spurs, man. 3-0, doing well. The one thing that I noticed, you know, the Spurs pride themselves as a defensive-oriented team and certainly have that great wing defense that you see there with Danny Green and then Kawhi there, you know, with Kawhi Leonard. One thing I noticed, they're allowing opponents to shoot a lot of threes. Now, they're not making a lot of them, right? They're all contested threes. It's about 31% that opponents are shooting from three-point land against San Antonio this year. But they've in three games, opponents have thrown up 84 three-point attempts. That's nearly 30 more than the Spurs have even taken. What's up with that? I mean, that sounds like a Seinfeld routine. What's the deal about that? Or what's up with that? It just seems like, you know, opponents are they trying to avoid going into the paint? Are they trying to avoid the mid-range game? Are the Spurs just giving them those open looks and they're just missing them? What do you think? What's going on with the three-point attempt totals from opponents of San Antonio so far?
I think it might be part of the game plan. I think they might be going to really that old Spurs type defense. Remember, teams would still shoot threes on them, even when they were really good defensively in the great years of, you know, 2003 and so forth with Tim Duncan. You know, they would just kill the layups. You know, they would just funnel them in and make them pass. So I think they're going with that same mindset because they're so long and they're so tall. DeJounte Murray has like a 7-foot wingspan, right? And then Danny Green has a long wingspan. Kawhi, when he comes back, he has a long wingspan. I think with his replacement, your boy Kyle Anderson, I don't think he's really long. He's just kind of slow. So he has to kind of play back. But at the same time, you know, they have the help there to kill it. So I think they're just contesting the three, and then they're just trying to play that old-style Spurs defense, which, I mean, with this group of guys, it works because they're quick, they're long. So, I really wouldn't pay attention to that stat unless they start making them. And then I think they might move to something else. But, you know, as much threes as they want to chuck up, that's fine because these guys are rebounding. These guys are contesting shots. I think it's okay.
Yeah, I think you could deal with them shooting that quantity of threes. But look at the teams that they play too. I mean, there's not really any post powerhouse except maybe the developing Karl Anthony Towns in that first game where Minnesota's still trying to get their act together. But they, you know, Chicago, there's real no dominating post presence for them to dump the ball into. Against Toronto, of course, they've got those great guards up there. So it makes a lot of sense that they're taking shots from the outside. I'd be curious. I don't agree with you in the fact that who cares the volume that they shoot. Of course, if they make them, then that's the real kicker there. But they haven't even played teams like Houston and Golden State yet, right? The teams that they really have to take out. If they're allowing that many three-point attempts, Houston and Golden State are going to make them. The team that they've played so far, you know, outside of DeMar DeRozan, you know, Jimmy Butler maybe on those teams, who's the real scoring threat that they faced so far? There's not one from the guard position. So it's intriguing. It's something to keep track of as the year goes on. But another great,
these are the days of our lives.
These are the days of our lives. Another great stat in the Spurs' favor that I thought was interesting. I know you like to harken back to the beautiful game days. How about this? 66 assists on the year so far for San Antonio. For those keeping track at home, that's 22 a game. That's huge. Huge. How about that?
That's what she said. You know, like I said, you said I like to hark back on it. No, I was
well,
on
I like
the beautiful
to, I say
game
harken
bandwagon.
Because hark isn't a yeah. word, but, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't go to college. Yeah.
Public schools.
I mean, I was on the beautiful game right when they signed Rudy Gay. Right when they signed him, I knew that he was going to bring that Bobo type of influence to the Spurs. And then, you know, Joffrey comes in and Powell becomes a little more settled. LaMarcus is, you know, passing crisper, if, you know, if that makes sense. But, you know, they're all really in that mentality. I mean, I called it a few months ago. So absolutely, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I'm surprised with how well Rudy Gay has fit into that mold. We knew that he was going to be a significant offensive presence for San Antonio. There's nobody outside of LaMarcus Aldridge that's really scoring the ball in a significant fashion, right? They're all moving the ball. Rudy Gay really hasn't exerted himself offensively other than as a facilitator early in the year. I think I said this on the last time I was on the show when I wasn't in charge of you, that Rudy Gay was really the new Boris Diaw. And I think I lifted that line from you to give credit, you know, back where it's due. But I think that Rudy Gay as a facilitator is even more advantageous for San Antonio than Rudy Gay as a scorer. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely, and I'm of the mindset that because the league is changing, you're not seeing those big lineups anymore, that you can actually slide him into the five position depending on who you're playing, and that would just make him absolutely unstoppable. I think, especially if you run the offense through him at the top of the key. So I absolutely agree with you because again, he can post up smaller guys, he can take bigger guys off the dribble. Again, who does that sound like? Boris Diaw, and the fact that he can pass. I mean, you know, he's really goes by instinct and he has a high basketball IQ. The thing about the Spurs is if you notice, even when they're in motion, there's somebody who's supposed to be at a certain spot, not necessarily that same guy. I mean, if they're all in motion, but there's supposed to be somebody there. So when somebody comes and helps out and they obviously know, like, okay, this guy was in the corner, now he's helping me out, he's just going to toss the ball, you know, to the corner and somebody's going to be there. We saw that with the hammer play. I think it was against the Timberwolves that they did a hammer play right off the post up, which is usually – it's not usual for them. They usually go, you know, at Ginobili at the top of the key and, you know, he basically fakes a layup. But the fact that he did that without second guessing it sort of tells you on his basketball IQ. So he's actually exceeding my expectations from what I thought about, you know, his signing. And I thought the world of him, just absolutely the world of him.
So another couple of guys that are playing just out of their minds are Danny Green defensively and LaMarcus Aldridge offensively. But I want to run through a couple of block statistics here. You know, it seems like San Antonio is getting a lot of blocks on the year. But did you know they have the number five, or he's tied for number five in the league in terms of number of blocks? And that's Danny Green has 7 blocks so far this year, 3 games in, 7 blocks. Powell's got 6 blocks. I was not prepared to see that. I had no idea that Powell was averaging 2 blocks a game already, and LaMarcus Aldridge with 5 blocks. You know, how is San Antonio this year? It seems to be a little bit different than most. Is it because the absence of Kawhi, people are stepping up their game? They're playing that way, or you know, what gives in terms of the number of blocks that these guys are getting?
You mentioned Danny Green, right?
Yep. You okay. Listening to this show?
Yeah, I was looking at my phone. Usually, people don't message me on my phone, so I mean, I get all excited.
Don't they know your job today?
The thing with Danny Green is now there's a lot of motion on offense,
yeah.
And I know you're talking about defense, and I know you're talking about blocks, but the fact that there's more motion, something he's comfortable with, it gets him more settled in on defense. And I know he was very good defensively last season. He got all NBA defense or whatever that's called, but he got, you know, that you know, accomplishment. But I think he's just more comfortable when you have a role player who gets the ball more on offense, and he's not really a guy who they run the offense through. I mean, that gets them more pumped up for the defensive end. So I'm not surprised at that. The part I'm sort of surprised with, but not really surprised, is Aldridge, like how you mentioned. I think he's more settled in after that talk with Pop. Most importantly, yeah, that guy. But most importantly, I think he's come to the realization of, you know, I'm a big man. You know, and I think really in the past it was, you know, a lot of people would dwell on the positions. Well, the big man's the center, you know, and the power forward is sort of like the in between the three and the five, and, you know, sort of get you all in this technicalities and all that. I think he's realized, hey, I'm one of the tallest guys on the court. I can block those shots. Mm-hmm. I can have somebody help me out, because remember in Portland, he, you know, they had Robin Lopez. That's really all the big man help he had. And Lopez wasn't that mobile, you know, in Portland, but again, he really stayed on that spot. He didn't really help out each other. And one of the models the Spurs have in their defensive schemes is help out the helper. And I think LaMarcus is more comfortable knowing, hey, if I go for the block, or if I go help, you know, kill a layup from this guy who got beat, you know, off the dribble, I know I'm going to have somebody covering for me. So I think it's right. More of the comfort level and accepting that role, and it's accepting really the scheme. You know, he's not looking behind his back anymore. He's not playing for a contract anymore. He's more comfortable. He sort of, you know, accepted that role, and I think it's really more with that comfort level.
You know, and he's showing his comfort on both sides of the ball. So far this year, it's been the LaMarcus Aldridge and DeJounte Murray show. LaMarcus is, you know, in this last game against Toronto, had 20 points. That's not unusual for a guy like LaMarcus. It's this year. It's down from his season average. Would you guess that LaMarcus Aldridge was a top 10 scorer in the NBA right now? At 24.3 points a game, he's a top 10 scorer in the NBA.
I would believe it, because, like I said, I'm sort of a coaching nerd, so I would have to see the team, see who's starting with, see really the game plan of it. If they're spreading the floor and he's doing his thing, I would absolutely buy it. Again, if it was more of, you know, a traditional lineup, I would say absolutely not. But the fact that they have ball movement and he's more comfortable, absolutely I'll buy it. MVP talk.
That's right. And, you know, a top 20 rebounder in the league. He's actually 19th with 9.7 rebounds a game. Certainly helped from the last game against Toronto, where the guy gets 14 rebounds out of the point guard position. DeJounte Murray is a top 20 rebounder in the league right now. Don't expect that to continue, but that speaks to his aggressiveness on both sides of the ball, and it speaks to his length. DeJounte Murray, you know, I know we've written articles about this. We've talked about it. You've been talking about it for a year. I've had to listen to you talk about DeJounte Murray and try to put this guy over. But it's really coming to fruition. DeJounte Murray is really stepping to his own, proving that he's an NBA caliber player. Manu Ginobili loves him. He's come out once and called him an all-star, you know, in this latest piece just a couple of days ago. You know, Manu Ginobili comes out and indicates that, you know, he remembers back to the days when he used to be able to play like a guy like DeJounte Murray, certainly not without that length. But DeJounte Murray is really stepping into his own. Makes you wonder about Tony Parker, and we'll talk about him in just a minute. But when Tony comes back, how do you manage the DeJounte Murray and Tony Parker situation? Because if you're getting 10 rebounds a game out of the point guard spot, that's Russell Westbrook level stuff. And if you're getting, you know, 10 to 15 points out of that spot, that's more than you could expect or want out of your point guard position on the Spurs.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was looking at the rebounding stats. DeJounte Murray is number 20 per ESPN as far as we're recording this. Everybody else is a big. They have Ben Simmons at point guard. You know, that's the type of stuff that should not be allowed. He's not a point guard. Mm-hmm. He's as much of a guard as I am a vegan. Absolutely not. He's a center who's playing point center. I'm with you. I don't know how they're going to handle the Tony Parker situation. Here's what worries me. It's not, you know, I think Pop is logical, you know, as far as what he wants to do with this team. If he thinks DeJounte Murray gives them the best chance, I think he starts him. I think he still gives Parker his minutes out of respect. But I don't think he really jeopardizes the team's championship aspirations to put his relationship with Tony Parker first. I don't think he does that. And I think Tony Parker at this point of his career, he accepts it. You know, he sees this kid flying, you know, jumping out of the arenas, catching rebounds, running the fast break like crazy. He knows he can't do that. The one thing that worries me is, you know, he's doing a lot of things on the court, like how you mentioned. He has a long wingspan. He's rebounding. He's rebounding like a big. The one thing that worries me is, let's say Pop does bring Tony Parker back in the mix. He starts him. Now, is the team used to the way DeJounte plays? Are they expecting, hey, we have our rebounding point guard out there. Now everybody else can run the floor and we could start a really quick fast break where we can score off of one dribble or two. You're not going to get that off of Tony Parker. Tony Parker is going to wait for everybody else to rebound, get the ball passed to him, and then initiate the offense. So it's really, you know, that's what worries me. The fact that if they get used to how DeJounte plays and then you insert Tony Parker, that's really going to break the chemistry up. That's, you're basically starting over with the team. But, you know, that's why I think, you know, like I said, logically, I think Pop has to think logically. I think he will think logically. And if DeJounte can keep this up for two more games, I think Pop is going to be forced to keep DeJounte playing starting point guard. But the one, and I don't think he'll be affected with Kawhi, because Kawhi brings, you know, everything else. I think he's used to being a part of a system, the beautiful game, that, you know, there's ball movement and he's not initiating the offense. He won Finals MVP with that. But Tony Parker is not that guy. He, you know, with the beautiful game, he initiated the offense. He initiated the ball movement. There's two different players in that. The one thing that we have to discuss, and I don't think it has been discussed enough, is what does Pop do with that backup point guard situation? Well, because you can always say, hey, I'll start DeJounte. That's fine. He's playing like a monster. But, I mean, you have Patty Mills and Tony Parker. Patty Mills, who's getting paid like a backup point guard, maybe even arguably like a starting point guard. And then you have Tony Parker, who's getting paid, but he's also the veteran on the team. I mean, that's going to be the harder decision. Who's going to be that second string guy if Murray's starting?
No, I agree with you. That's the point I was going to bring up. If Parker is not starting, you have to start wondering, is Parker the third string point guard on this team? They're not going to mess with the rotation of Patty Mills as one of the primary scoring options in that second line, if not the primary. Of course, he's, as we talk about all the time, he plays more shooting guard than point guard. The guy who initiates the offense in that second line is Manu Ginobili. I think you see either Tony Parker taking third string point guard duties, or you start seeing him splitting minutes with the other guy, Manu Ginobili. Why couldn't I remember his name? It's going to be a real odd rotation for these guys. I'm really curious to see how Popovich is going to manage that, because you're right. If you've got 15 points from DeJounte Murray, you got 10 rebounds out of DeJounte Murray, you got, you know, between three and five assists a night out of him, that's all you need to start winning titles again in San Antonio. When you couple that with guys like Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green with timely shooting, and of course LaMarcus Aldridge, you really don't want to mess that up. So the rotations are going to be very, very odd. I'm concerned with how Popovich is going to have to manage that. Now, that won't be for some time. Tony Parker is apparently going to be rehabbing in Austin with the G League Austin Spurs, which is a real treat for those guys up there to see Tony Parker rehabbing there. I think it's just going to be an amazing opportunity for folks to go and see Tony when they might not otherwise be able to. But he's already back to full contact drills. His timeline to get back, remember, we were talking about after January sometime. If he's already in full contact drills, what are you thinking? Are you? I know that you moonlight as a doctor, but I mean, are we a month out from seeing Tony Parker back in the NBA?
I'm an unofficial lower body specialist. The brood of the glute, as I was called before.
Okay.
I think we are like a month away from seeing him. And again, this raises a lot of questions. I'm going to give you my prediction on this, okay?
That's what the show's about.
If Parker can come back at 70% of what he brought last season, not, you know, a better version of Tony Parker or, you know, whatever people, or even the same version, 70%. I think Patty Mills is traded. I'll put that out there. I'll be the first one to call. Because, again, Parker's going to be a free agent this coming season. If you can sign him for cheap, throw away Patty's contract, DeJounte's earning less, I think they could maneuver something to get a big name to sign with San Antonio, and especially with that team that they have there. But as you mentioned, you know, I think we're a month away from seeing him. And I wouldn't pay attention to really two of those whatever reports might come out, like, oh, he looked good during this rehab stint, or, you know, he looked good during this game. I think you wait for the third one. I think he's going to be pumped up for the first one. He might try a little bit harder than usual, but, you know, around the third game, if they give him three games, he may be settled in. We might see the guy who's going to be out there with the Spurs at some point after the month. So I would wait for the third, maybe for the third game, and see what he can bring. But
that's interesting.
We're aiming for 70%. That's what I'm aiming for. 70%, and he leaves the door wide open for a trade for Patty Mills.
So that's interesting that you're saying that, because now you're convincing me, because, you know, this team doesn't need multiple point guards. I mean, they just need two, right? So I guess that's multiple, but they only need two. Because you've got Manu Ginobili, who initiates the offense, can bring up the ball, all the good stuff about Manu Ginobili. And you got Kawhi Leonard coming back, who can bring the ball up the court. And you got Danny Green, who could bring the ball up the court.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, you have multiple positions, I'm saying, that can handle the ball and initiate the offense. So if DeJounte Murray is still playing lights out, and you could back him up with Tony Parker, I see how that does make Patty Mills expendable. And it is in line with their 2018. The summer of 2018 strategy. And so I do wonder if they were to end up moving Patty Mills, if that became, you know, if he became expendable, who do you move him for? Because you don't move him for another point guard, because he doesn't really play point guard. You move him for another scorer, a shooting guard. And I'm wondering what shooting guards would be available, what big names, and, you know, for another team who needs a, you know, point guard slash score out of the point guard position. And I'd be remiss if I didn't just think about the fact that J.R. Smith has reclaimed the starting shooting guard role in Cleveland and made Dwayne Wade come off of the bench. That's interesting, because they don't have a whole lot of depth at the point guard spot. As I speculate, that might be one scenario, because, I mean, there was a rumor there anyway over the summer about Dwayne Wade. Very interesting. You're going to give people a lot to think about,
which you typically do. That's the whole point of this. But I'll disagree with you on this. I think the league is going to see him as a combo guard. I think they're going to see him, well, yeah, he can play a little bit of point, and he's a little bit of a shooting guard. I don't think they'll see him as a shooting point, or whatever you want to sort of call it, or off the ball shooting guard, or whatever it might be.
I agree with you. It gives him depth at two spots. I mean, it's the same thing that he's got here. I mean, he is who he is, right? But he's given him depth at two different positions.
Yeah,
he's too small to be a shooting guard, a pure shooting guard, of course.
Yeah, I mean, he's really Allen Iverson in a sense, and that's what I call a tweener. I tweeners for me are not versatile guys. Versatile guys are like Ginobili, who's a shooting guard who can legitimately play point guard. This guy is Patty Mills is a shooting guard who is a point guard who can't play point guard and has to be a shooting guard or whatever. I'm confusing myself with this, but, you know, thinking about that with that trade, but don't be surprised if they don't trade him this season. I don't think it might come this season. I think they might roll with the team that they have. Pop might try to pull some strings with, you know, finding the minutes. But in the offseason, again, I think this is where the Spurs really built themselves up to be primed for that. You know, Rudy Gay has, I think, a player option at $8 million. But, I think the team might be selling him on, you were good in the system, instead of being good over, you know, being that player that you once were. So even if he declines that option, I think he'll come cheaper. But this is the
part. Are you talking about Rudy Gay?
Yeah.
Oh, it looks like he's just having a blast playing in the system.
Yeah, this is the trade you'll want to watch out for, and this is maybe something that'll get Spurs fans excited for the offseason. Is you have that Patty Mills contract. He's earning I think like 9 to 11 around there, right? Pau Gasol, his mm-hmm. deal the third year is not fully guaranteed. It's partial guaranteed. So don't be surprised even if you see like a team like the Cavs, you know, if they need players, you might want to ship Gasol out there, and you could get a LeBron James, because you know, when a sign and trade those two big contracts for, like how you were saying, maybe a Dwayne Wade, a LeBron. I think it's very feasible, especially with what other teams are going through, like the Lakers and all that. So I think the Spurs left themselves a door open for many possibilities. I know I was one of the critics on their situations, how they handled Pau, and you know, giving him more money than he probably deserved, and right. With Patty, sort of, you know, now that he's expendable, he's sort of overpaid now. So I think they're in prime position to do something with that. But again, it all relies on Tony Parker.
That's right.
At least 70%. If he can hit that 70% mark in our hearts and in that quad, I think the Spurs are really in a great situation.
Well, there's no better way to end the show. So how about you put a lock on this episode of Locked on Spurs? How about that?
Did you hear that? I locked it.
It sounded more like a whip than a lock. But that could,
whatever floats your boat, sir.
Anything could be going on over at your house. So we'll just leave it at that. Jose, thanks a lot. Where can people hit you up on Twitter?
At JRG 1023. By the way, 1023, my birthday was Monday. You did not get me.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, I didn't know what that was. I thought that was like you're a part of the 1,000 pound club, and that was your 1,000th pound. You got 1,023 pounds up. See, I was trying to give you some cred. I did not know it was your birthday, man. Well, happy birthday. Everybody on Twitter, send pictures of you in your birthday suit over to Jose at JRG1023.
Hope it's a real suit.
Me, I'm at Ryan MC_BS. And that's it for this episode of Locked on Spurs.